Thanks, Nelika, for that excellent meditation reflection. Winter is so interesting. It puts us in places where we try and do all kinds of new things. This past week, I had the experience of having that little light pop up on your dash telling you that your key fob battery is running low. And it's been running low for a couple of weeks now. And I thought, like, okay, I need to take care of that. And then one really, really cold day, I must have left my keys in the car. And I came out, and, like, it wasn't starting, and I was somewhere else. And so I was, like, taking the thing. I was, like, holding it, warming the thing. And it worked. It actually started. And I'm like, okay, now I need to replace it. So I went to the Ace Hardware and replaced it, and had one of those moments, you know, where, like, technology and modern society just kind of, like, amazes you. I bought this little CR2032 battery that you have to get for these key fobs, right? And now there's a thing that Duracell said. I got the package, and it said a bitter taste coating helps reduce swallowing, and it had a really cute little icon of a baby just making a really bitter face. And, you know, I've never wanted to lick a battery before. And for the record, it is very unpleasant. It stays on your tongue for much longer than it should. I guess it does the trick. It was weird. I blame Duracell for putting that thought in my head. We're in the winter season here, and as mentioned, I chose that song title. It's a great song. So good. On so many levels. I love the Simon and Garfunkel version. Anybody who's ever watched Arrested Development knows that Hello Darkness, My Old Friend plays a very special role in one character and is kind of a callback joke. But darkness in this time of year has historically not been good for me. My mental health struggles when there's not a lot of sunlight. And through the years, I've tried lots of different things. What I've come to realize in hindsight is that probably a lot of the things I tried were very helpful at the time, but really it represented just a season of life when you're raising kids and when you're doing lots of things. Winter can be tough, and winter is where when you finally slow down enough and things catch up to you, and your brain kind of starts running. I bought one of those SAD lamps, they call it. It's seasonal affective disorder, SAD, which is probably one of the best acronyms for something, right? How do you feel? I feel sad. I've tried one of those lamps, and you know, it helps. It works. We spent a whole winter in our RV in the Southwest. That was beautiful. That was lovely. We've spent time in the sun. We have done what many of you have told me, where you book trips in the December, January, February timeframe, whatever fits like your peak low point so that you can get away and kind of escape all of that. There's no right or wrong way. As we were saying in pre-talk, the goal here of this series is not to tell you how to properly winter, because if you're an overachiever like me, you want to buy the book, How to Winter, and you're like going to ace this thing, right? I'm going to winter so hard this year. It's going to be the best winter ever. I'm going to winter better than everyone else. And of course, winter invites us to do kind of the opposite, to slow down, to reflect. That's hard for certain personality types. And I'm learning to intentionally lean into my need and that part of me that wants to run so hard all the time. And to recognize that sometimes it's okay to just say, slow down, not right now. Driving in this morning, I was listening to a new album in the beginning of my drive. It's about a half hour drive, so put on a new album that I was especially geeked to listen to, and then I thought, you know what, it's kind of gray, it's kind of rainy, and I'm just gonna turn this off and just have silence for the trip. In case you don't know kind of where I'm leaning towards. I pulled books out of my library like this. This one right here, In Praise of Slowness, Challenging the Cult of Speed. This is a book I've had for so many years, and I think I bought this book aspirationally. Yeah, have you ever done that with a book? You know, a dieting book, an exercise book, a thing like, oh, I should do that. And you're like, oh man, I'm really good at reading about it. I'm not so good at doing it at all. But this invitation to slowness is so essential. This is, when I was pulling this back out and kind of reading, this is what Carl Honoré says. He says, like a bee in a flower bed, the human brain naturally flits from one thought to the next. In the high-speed workplace where data and headlines come thick and fast, we are all under pressure to think quickly. Reaction rather than reflection is the order of the day. I read that and that just sounded so true. It was like a gut punch to me because when we run so hard and when we keep our lives so full, the best we can hope for is just reacting. And maybe you've been in times and seasons of life where that's just been your reality and that's all you can do. But winter invites us to slow down where and when we can. Reaction rather than reflection is the order of the day. To make the most of our time and to avoid boredom, we fill up every spare moment with mental stimulation. Keeping the mind active makes poor use of our most precious resource. True, the brain can work wonders in high gear, but it will do so much more given the chance to slow down from time to time. Shifting the mind into lower gear can bring better health, inner calm, enhanced concentration, and the ability to think more creatively. We know this. This is not new information. Researchers have been telling us for years that building in healthy rhythms that give you essential periods of rest and downtime is so crucial. Countries that introduce four-day work weeks or even less have healthier people, better workforces, more stable employment, people that have jobs where they're able to take paternity leaves. We know all these things are true, but we live in the cult of speed. We live in the cult of now. We're in the Western society where everything is so fast-paced. As Carrie Fisher, who played Leia, said, this is kind of my indirect Star Wars quote for this week there, but she was fond for saying that these days, even instant gratification doesn't happen fast enough. So why do we get swept up in all of it? And how do we get off that train? How do we get off the merry-go-round of more, faster, keep going, keep running, keep doing? And this is, in fair warning, one of those talks and one of those series that is probably more for me than it is for anyone else. And if you want to listen along to the thoughts that I share with myself, you're welcome to, because this is not something that comes easy for me. Embracing the season and embracing this time of reflection, though, is something I'm trying to lean into. You see, when I look back on my last couple decades and my mental health journeys, and for the most part, I've been quite fortunate. I have had, at best, just seasons of malaise. Up until two winters ago, I had a significant bout of depression, and so my record that was unmarred up until that point was broken, but I identified during that wintering time, which happened to be during the middle of the summer, so when I'm talking about winter, be aware that your winter may not be in the seasons of the earth, but there is some wisdom to aligning ourselves with the planet that we share. But it was during this time of really, really dark depression that I recognized and better connected and identified with so many of my friends who are neurodivergent and have struggled with so many different areas. I don't want to downplay depression and sadness and the things that naturally happen during the winter. But I want to invite us into the question that maybe there is another alternative to us simply just saying, winter's here. I guess I'm just going to be extra depressed for a little while and to hope that we're going to make it through to the other side. Somebody shared this morning, and I love this. They said that if they can make it to May, that they're good, because at this age, you know, like I'm going to die during the winter. So if I make it to May, I'm good at least until the following winter, which is such a funny and wonderful way to think about it. I love that. So now I'm going to be thinking that way, like making it through the winter. But, you know, what I realize is that in the past, what I often took for happiness in my own life was conditional happiness. It meant that I was feeling good and doing well with the circumstances that I was in at the moment. Maybe they were even unpleasant, but I'd had some kind of a healthy equilibrium with it. But conditional happiness is not the same as a true happiness, as what Buddhists would say is the deeper source of inner contentment that is not ruffled by external circumstances. Conditional happiness says, when I have this or when I can do this, my happiness increases. And we should all be pursuing happiness in our own lives. So there's nothing wrong with doing that. And if medication, if therapy, if those things are helpful, those are very worthwhile pursuits in your own life. But isn't our goal to seek an inner peace, an inner connection that transcends all these external things? Can we move from a conditional happiness into a transcendent happiness, a happiness that says, not if these things are in place will I be happy, but I can find peace and contentment now. And it's a shift in perspective. You see, our attention, I've had some of my meditation instructors say this before, that our attention is like a flashlight in a dark room. And what we point our flashlight towards, and in some cases it's a very narrow beam, but we oftentimes are running it around all over the place. And our mind is constantly flitting from this to that. But what we shine our attention on, what we shine our flashlight on, is what we notice, and it's what occupies our inner world. What we focus on carries us. And so there is this shift in perspective. I was reading this week this book, very appropriately titled How to Winter, by Carrie Lebovitz. She's a researcher who spent a year in Trøndelag, Norway, exploring this very unique fact that we know that there is such a thing as seasonal affective disorder, and that lower amounts of sunlight can affect our mental health. And yet, there's cultures, there's countries, there's parts of the world that have up to 3 months out of the year or more in darkness. And mysteriously, their happiness quotient is so much higher than where it should be. And yes, there are organizations that track things like the happiness index. There is a global happiness index, by the way. We don't place super high in there. We're not a very happy country, unfortunately. But the countries that you find there, now granted, there's a lot of other mitigating factors, but it's interesting that some of the countries on that list are the ones that have some of the least amount of sunlight in the year. And so that kind of runs counter to this idea that less sunlight and this grayer weather and this time of darkness can only be a time for depressive introspection, for dark music and dark thoughts. Maybe there's another way to go through this season by shifting your perspective from I'll be happy when to I can be content now. We find that this shift in perspective carries so much weight. Carrie Lebovitz said, how we attend to things shapes our existence. Our attention is a powerful tool. It's like that flashlight. It plays a tremendous role in our everyday experience. What we attend to becomes what we see. What we see becomes what we engage with, and what we engage with becomes our life. This is why a few weeks ago, when we were kind of wrapping up this What the World Needs Now, we had to recognize and come to grips with saying that for us to find equanimity and balance, some things may need to take a backseat for a while. Some of us are taking a break from the news for a period of time, or are on a more reduced input of news. Some of us are making choices right now to guard and protect our personal well-being, and we should champion that. But I want to read this last sentence again. What we attend to becomes what we see. What we see becomes what we engage with. What we engage with becomes our life. What Carrie found in talking to the people of Trosloff, Norway, is that their perspective was one of embracing the season, of looking forward to the time. Rather than saying, why don't you have seasonal depression, people in Trosmo would say, why would we? For them, the winter was the time of so many wonderful traditions. There's a couple that I'm going to be talking about in the next few weeks, but I've been really contemplating winter as this season, and in connecting ourselves with this planet that we're on. I'm reading some Braiding Sweetgrass, Robin Wall Kimmerer. Her newest book has so many thoughts in it right now on the service berry about abundance and reciprocity in nature. This idea that she's exploring in this book about how even economists are looking to the flows and the cycles of nature and creating economic models, not based on scarcity, but based upon abundance and reciprocity. And how wild is it that maybe after all this time, we, this highly evolved species sharing this planet, may not be the smartest after all, and maybe there is some wisdom to be found in returning to the rhythms and the cycles of nature. What I saw in these people from Norway and historically and repeatedly when people engage in these practices, there's a happiness that kind of transcends the moment. It's how you can be so happy on a ski hill or on a sled hill when you were a kid and your nose is running and your face is red and, you know, like moms, you know what this is like when you're little kids. Like, you're just like going crazy and it's like making the most of that experience. And I don't know what that looks like for you and I don't want to tell you what it is, but I want to invite us to respond to the invitation of winter, to explore what wintering looks like for us in our own lives. Because winter doesn't just have to happen to us. It doesn't just have to be something that we get through. It's more than just a mark of, did I live one more year? It can be something that can shape how we grow. Because as several people pointed out in the pre-talk this morning, what looks like dormancy out here is kind of a misdirection. It's nature's big magic show. Because under the snow, behind the bark, nestled into dens, life is still there, just waiting. It's necessary to have those times of slowing down, of giving yourself space to listen to that inner voice and the inner dialogue, to let all the other noise fall away for a moment. In Joan Chittister's book, she wrote another book that is also applicable for this time. It's called Between the Dark and the Light. She says, only the experience of our own darkness gives us the light we need to help others whose journey into the dark spots of life is only just beginning. It is then that our own taste of darkness qualifies us to be an illuminating part of that human expedition. Without that, we are only words, only false witnesses to the truth of what it means to be pressed to the ground and to rise again. The light we gain in darkness is the awareness that However bleak the place of darkness was for us, we did not die there. We know that life and light begins again on the other side of darkness. This season, this time, this place for you, whatever it looks like and wherever you are heading into, whether you're traveling somewhere warm, you're about to go to somewhere else and vacation, or you're thinking more short term about how you're going to make it through the family gatherings and the Christmas celebrations. My hope for you is that you could respond to this darkness and to invite it in, like Rumi, to fling the doors of your heart wide open and to embrace the darkness of the season. We're heading towards the winter solstice this weekend, the darkest night of the year, the longest night. In the past, yes, I've looked towards the winter solstice for one reason only, because after winter solstice, everything gets brighter. Right? But isn't that kind of like the kid who wants to eat his cake so he just crams through everything else just so he can get to that? There's something to be born in the winter. There are things to be learned from this season. And it's more than just something to push through. It's more than just something to just kind of like put our head in the sand. It's something to embrace. One of the tips that was shared in the book from many of the different examples is that so many of these cultures reframe the season by putting in practices of things to look forward to that stand in contrast to the moment. So it's a book that you're reading. Now is the time to get into that series and to curl up, cozy up, and wrap yourself up in blankets and not give yourself any crap about doing that. To embrace the slowing down, to embrace what this season is inviting us into, to allow the wisdom of stillness and silence to speak to us. Because some things can only be spoken out of silence. I think somebody shared that in an email that they enjoyed shoveling the snow in the dark, and afterwards just kind of like if you like when you walk out in a snowfall in the evening at night when everything is so quiet and muffled. It's a sacred space. It's sacred for nature. It's something that nature doesn't fight. It just accepts as part of the cycle and the normal way of things. It's only we who have had the ability to create light bulbs and have never-ending lights to flip on switches all the time. Maybe we should spend some time with some more candles, a little less light, a little more darkness. I want to end with a poem, and this is kind of a freebie because this one's for Wayne and for all of you who enjoy Wendell Berry. There's so many good poems, and I'm going to be trying to share some of them in the coming weeks and maybe in my emails, but winter is also so perfect for introspective music, poetry, good record, cup of tea. Wendell Berry in his poem, The Cold, I'll leave you with this. You can come up afterwards. How exactly good it is to know myself in the solitude of winter. My body containing its own warmth, divided from all by the cold, and to go separate and sure among the trees, cleanly divided. Thinking of you, perfect, too, in your solitude, your life withdrawn into your own keeping. To be clear, poised in self-suspension, toward you as though frozen, and having known fully the goodness of that, it will be good also to melt.